He was a manager of product marketing and Conex Systems, a semiconductor company that drives broadcast communications for the digital house. His professional also includes being senior technical and marketing roles at Siemens, as well as Accelerated Networks. When it comes to the role of metadata and its importance in provisioning and monitoring of DTV services in the ATSC 1 and ATSC 3.0 infrastructures, he's a frequently called upon speaker on the topic of ATSC 3 deployment strategies and test and measurement approaches to advanced broadcast platforms and mobile DTV delivery at many well-known, renowned industry conferences. Some of these include the Broadcast Engineering Conference at the NAB, the Broadcast Asia Conference, and the Caribbean Cable and Telecommunications Association. On top of everything else that I've mentioned before this, he also has an executive MBA and a Bachelor of Science degree in telecommunications technologies. Ladies and gentlemen, join me in welcoming our next speaker and his presentation, How to Deliver Next-Gen TV with Minimal Cost, Equipment, and Power Usage, Mr. Ralph Bakafan.
Good afternoon, everybody. It's good to be back here in beautiful Wisconsin. It's raining today. What can I say? It's probably my fault. It's not snowing, so there's a plus right there. Yeah, I'm tall, I know. Freakishly tall, as my wife calls me, but there's a different discussion over a couple of years. Anyway, it's great to be back here. I got a talk this year. Last year I talked about data casting. What I'm talking about this year is a little bit, not so much the financial aspects of ATC3 owned expanding to your viewership, but more the technical aspects. You will figure out, you know, less boxes equals less money. It's pretty simple as that. So that's what I want to talk about a little bit today. And there's actually a really great venue here, and I love to come here because there's so many PBS environments as well, which we have been lucky enough as a Tri-Veni to work with and get excellent feedback, you know, to make our products better. So I always love to come here. Who has seen ATSC 3? Anybody? Nobody? Nobody has seen ATSC 3 in this state. Oh, wow, you guys made me cry. Damn, yeah, maybe next year, I've come back next year and we talk about ATSC 3 deployment or something like that. So anyway, so maybe just a high level. This is kind of generically, super generically, how ATSC 3 looks like. Let's see if I have actually a pointer. Let's see, maybe not. On the left-hand side, you basically see all the data inputs into the ATC3 environments, which let's call them encoders, harmonic encoders, then the media encoders, the TEM encoders, what have you. They do the audio video environments. So that's where your programs are. But then you have also data sources, which is a bit different than in the ATC1 environment, where we had PSIP and these kind of things, which we now call signaling and ESG. So these data sources go then combined into a broadcast gateway, which kind of creates after that the RF, so to speak. It's still IP-based, but it creates the RF environment, which is the STLTP, then goes to an exciter. You know, I think I've seen a bunch of exciter folks around here, like X-Harris and stuff like that. And then it hits the transmitter. So everything in here is IP-based, just like this morning. From LTN, reiterating, everything is IP-based, except, of course, when you hit the tower, right? That's OFDM in ATSC 3 environment. But that's kind of generically speaking the workflow in regard of ATSC 3.0. And I've actually changed the flow of the slide right before the event because I wasn't sure how many people know about ATSC 3.0, so I'm glad I did this. So what's important here throughout the presentation kind of is you see that signing, and the lock around the data source number one. And so signaling and ESG is actually a mandatory item within your ATSC 3 environment. You have to sign that. which you know all of the products do. Some of the receiver products is a little more challenging these days because we're so early. But you know, when you have a TV, LG, Samsung, these kind of things, they do automatically basically unsigning, so to speak. So you will have to do basically nothing on the receiver end if you're just broadcasting AV. If you do data casting, that's a different discussion. We can have a separate discussion about that. But so the signing and the signaling of the ESG is signed. The reason why ATSC3 requires that is because, as I mentioned before, everything is IP-based. If you have worked in the IP environment or internet protocol world, you can easily spoof it and steal it and redirect it, right? So it's actually easy to take care of an IP stream and just redirect it. So what that does, that actually will stop, doesn't allow you to do that. So that's kind of, keep that in mind throughout the presentation. So this is kind of really just a reiteration of the previous point I made. Again, everything is IP based except the RF itself, that's OFDM. But everything is IP based. There's a ton of protocols within the stack, in the protocol stack. And this, again, it's all IP, different kind of encapsulation, these kind of things. The important part here is on this slide is the broadcast gateway is basically served by, let's call it a transport encoder, and then that gateway creates an STLTP to the exciter, and there is basically normally one STLTP per exciter. There's one exception actually, and that's when you create an SFN around that. So you still have an STLTP, but then you can build SFNs around that to increase your reach to your viewership. And there's actually not much you need to do, except it's tricky from an SFN receiver perspective, but I'm not in that business, so I don't know much. It's kind of black magic to me, so I don't know too much about SFNs. But so keep in mind, this is all IP, and each interface between the products or protocol stacks is also IP-based. So this is, again, I try to make this very generic. A generic broadcast network, and each TV station is different. And then, quite frankly, I bring that joke every time I see even PBS folks out there. If you have seen a PBS station, you have seen one PBS station. It's just following me, that joke. So everybody's really always different. But you can have here the studio is where all your magic is and your main engineers are, right? But then you can have towers all over the state, so you have a lot of statewide networks. Now ECB is a statewide network, right, here in Wisconsin. So you're a good example for that. So you're a statewide network. Some of your transmitter might, of course you have the main transmitter, right? But then you have repeaters, translators, and they're fed differently. You have fiber, you have microwave, in some cases even copper up to a mountain. You don't have too many mountains around here. I mean, I'm from Switzerland, I have a different kind of view of mountains than hills. But anyway, so you're feeding those transmitter in different kind of environments. Keep in mind, again, this is all IP, how you feed it. Even if it's in a microwave, by the way, that's a lot of people ask me that, what do I have to do on my microwave? It has to be an IP microwave, otherwise it's not working. So everything has to be IP-based. So you're basically feeding your AV and your signaling and your signing to basically into your network, which that switch is basically a network. It's just a switch. It's really nothing complicated. And then you distribute that. If you remember the previous slide, maybe I go back just once. That one, right? If you would have to have one of those setups in each of those transmission locations or transmitters or antennas, if you have one of those setups where you have encoder, transport encoder, and gateway in each of those antennas, me as a salesperson, I would be really happy, right? You as a buyer, probably not so much. So that's where the discussion is coming from. So how do we redistribute and distribute my ATSC3 environment in my statewide network or broadcast network, with lesser boxes to make it more cost effective? actually go too fast. So on the bottom right here, you see a translator. And you know, when I say translator, I also sometimes mean repeater. So it really doesn't matter to me that much. So I know there's a slight difference. But so one would think you also have, in your network here in Wisconsin, most likely you have translators and maybe some repeaters. When I say repeater, it's just, you know, in and out, no changes, right? And the translator takes the RF in or the IP in and then changes the call letter, for example. So that's when I say translator, that's what I mean with that. There's always different kind of nomenclatures, I guess. But you know, I'm going to talk a little bit about the translators as well today, because it's a topic which we have actually discussed in many statewide networks, like North Carolina PBS is heavily involved in helping us actually developing some of these products. So in regard to the requirements, so there is the translator requirements, so you have to be able to receive 3.0, either IP or RF. When I say IP, it's an STLTP, and RF, it's RF. So if you want to repeat that function with minimal, you know, exposure to, you know, CapEx, that's one of the functions you need to do. Then, of course, as I mentioned before, you have to be able to change the call letter, because, you know, the call letter here in Madison is different than somewhere else, right? So you need to be able to change that call letter to reflect, you know, that requirement. And then what we just started working on is, which I call here nice to have, is localization. One would think, I'm making a sample because it really just happened in my neighborhood where I live. I live in Sarasota area in Florida. So when I get a tornado warning, the people in Miami don't give a hoot, right? And vice versa. So localization from this perspective is super important. So nice to have is localization. So how do we insert local emergency alerts or, you know, any local content which is pertinent to your viewership? So that's the nice to have. So these are kind of the requirements of, you know, what needs to be done as a minimum to take an ATC3 signal in either IP or RF, and then repeat it or translate it. So that's kind of the requirements. There's a lot of problems in the requirements are about that small, high level, right? So it didn't look that complicated, but there's a problem in the details with the standard. And the first one is, and I mentioned at the beginning of the presentation, signing, right? You really don't want to allow somebody to steal your IP path and redirect it somewhere else, right? Shouldn't be able to do so. Hence, the standards calls out signing within the signaling environment. So, but what that means is each call letter basically has to have a specific signed signaling. Wow, that's complicated. But yes, it has to have a signed signaling for each call letter. You can group it a little bit, these kind of things, and then sometimes you ask, you know, for example, you have data casting applications, going back to my last year's presentation. If you have, for example, a school board which just wants to hit a certain area of schools, right, you need to have that signed too, make sure only that particular, you know, school can receive it, and, you know, me in another county, I shouldn't really care about it. So you can do the signing and the signaling in particular to different kind of contents as well. You could actually not kind of do that. You can basically push an STLTP or an IP stream to each of those transmitters, but I don't think you have that much bandwidth in your infrastructure. So that's what the other problem is. So from a standard perspective, you must kind of signing your infrastructure, and then you have limitations in bandwidth requirements within, you know, your fiber network or however your however your backbone looks like. So you can't just send STLTP you can't just send STLTP to each transmitter, because it's going to eat up your bandwidth. And the sad story about that is, at least in the PBS environment, most of your content is the same. You maybe just change the call letter. Everything else is the same. So that would be a waste of bandwidth. So these are kind of the constraints there in regards of what the requirements say. Here's a little bit of a different picture, which I kind of created to show where the kind of the protocols are on a very high level in regards of the first block diagram. So you have on top, you know, different AV services, On the bottom is the signaling, which is also signed. And then again, you have NRT or interactivity, which also must be actually signed as well and separately. So you these two things are a mandatory thing. And there's actually a lot of discussion going on out there. It's kind of scary sometimes because, again, it's new technology and complicated. A lot of people say, oh, your ATC 3.0 is, there's a lot of DRM going on, you're losing viewership and these kind of things. It's not true. Don't be scared and don't believe YouTube, please. Oh, don't believe me either. I'm a sales guy, so maybe I shouldn't say that either. But don't believe YouTube. So all the signing aspect is built in every receiver you buy. There were, in the past, vendors, set-top box vendors, not TV, set-top box vendors, which created, you know, early prototypes, which was actually super duper awesome. I have one or two at home. They're great. But they haven't had the time to put signing in there. So the minute you don't have signing and the TV station turns on signing, you ain't seeing nothing. So that's where kind of the discussion comes out. If you see on the internet, oh, DRM, you're de-enfranchising my viewership, they can't receive it anymore. It's not true. You know, if you have a standard-based receiver, there's no problems whatsoever. Let me go to the next slide. So this is kind of the other block diagram, you know, add-on. I mean, we talked about the first three steps and the antenna. But then you can, I actually talked to Tyler before during lunch, you know, some of the repeaters or translators either can be reached via RF or IP. So this is an RF example. But, you know, sometimes they are also too far away, right? So you don't have really good reception at your translator. So you have to put fiber out there or again, microwave, these kind of things. So as you can see, so that data source number one on the left top side is again signed. And all this is IP-based and multicast will be shipped out to that upper left translator. So if my translator doesn't know what to do in regards of signing and is trying to switch the call letter, it will not work. It technically could be a repeater, but not a translator, because the repeater doesn't change the if you have the same call letter at your main transmitter and your repeater, you're fine. So this is kind of the repeater model, where you really don't have to do much as long as you have a box which can take in, you know, IP or RF and then hit your local exciter up there. So that's basically that sample. Here's a couple of bullet points again, the way we see the world out there, again, in regards of, you know, what kind of the functionality is. Again, the repeater, there's no change. It's just, I'm not an RF guy, so don't hate me. I'm really not good at that. It's all, again, I say black magic. There is actually some functionalities out there which I have seen, which takes the RF in and just rebroadcasts it. You don't need to drive any product for that at all. So it's just, you know, an RF conversion. So that actually works also for 3.0. So if you really just want to do a repeater, nothing changes. You should be fairly in the clear. In the move into the translator where you change the channel number, it's important that you look at, you have to be able to receive the signing and make that call letter actually valid, so to speak. And again, we talked about the localization, about the tornadoes, which just happened in my neighborhood. So, you know, it's very localized. So you have to see how do we get from where we are today to go to tomorrow so we can, you know, serve our communities better. This one here. So this is just a repeater sample, how it would look like. And again, there's nothing you need to do, basically, and that repeater can be just a basic RF repeater or any other product out there, fairly straightforward, because again, there's no changes being made. So now it gets a little bit more complicated when I go into that infrastructure discussion. I really haven't changed anything on the slide deck, except that I added a config file, which actually has... So within ATC 3.0, we created this A3SA signing environment, which is, and A3SA provides through that process a certificate from IONTI, very complicated. If you really want to know the detail how is this done, talk to Mike Schmidt from Heartland. he knows everything about that process. He's advocating about that all the time. Anyway, so you get basically a certificate for each of the call letters, which you then, you know, if you have just a central cast and, you know, a couple of main sticks, easy, you insert those certificates in your central transport encoder, and then it's being pushed out, and the magic happens there. But if you have a repeater and you would like to create a translator out of that with a different call letter, you need to let that translator know, where's my certificate? How does that look like? So what we do is we basically take that certificate or config file and put it into the DSDP, which is protocol stack within the AT3 delivery platform, put it in there, sign it, send it back to with the data, basically, with the signing data, send it to the translator and say, hey, this is for you, unwrap it. The translator unwraps it, oh, cool, yes, this is right, I can change the call letter, and then that's it, it's done. And we can do the same thing with any kind of data delivery. It doesn't really have to be just the call letter, any kind of NRT delivery, you know, again, educational data casting, these kind of things. We can apply that in there as well. Well, there's Dennis from Heartland. I just threw you a bone before, Dennis. Actually, Mike, that is. So that's how it's configured in regards of a translator. And then the minute you do the localization, it gets, you know, it's kind of the same as a prior sample. You take, you know, you take the AV or data environment and put it into your data casting PLP, for example, and put the signing on that and distribute that to your translator. The same thing happens like before. It's just, you know, let's call this a private data environment where you, you know, it's not really private, but it's a private data environment where you sign that content, sit into the translator unpacks it and said, okay, I can redistribute that properly. So we call that Translator Plus. And by the way, that product does not exist yet. We're still working on that one because we haven't seen a lot of requirements for it yet. There's needs, but we haven't gotten to the implementation yet fully, where we do actually the local insertion. And actually needs collaboration between product vendors as well. For example, you know, if you have an ES environment, for example, most likely you have a Monroe or a Sage or something like that in your environment. A DASTEC, is that what it's called? A DASTEC from Monroe. If you have one of those, right, there's communications to be done between that product and our product, so we can actually hand this off properly. We got a time here. So that's done with, the minute you do, a translator with localization. We also can do this over the internet. I have been talking before that we can do this over IP, you know, a fiber delivery or microwave or an RF repeater. You can put this also on the internet or the public internet, and then you just put an SRT around that, which is secure, reliable transport protocol. So you can put a wrapper around this, put it over the public internet, and hit your local transmitter or translator as well. You can do these kind of things as well. I've seen not a lot of action or requirements from my client base. I think a lot of people are reluctant going over the public network, but from a technology perspective, at least it's possible. So it really comes down to how comfortable you feel with utilizing that environment. Oh, that screen got messed up, so I'm gonna skip that one again. And then, yes, so I want to go back to this one to just reiterate my last point, my environment. So you have this whole network. Again, yours, I'm sure, it looks completely different, right? Everybody has a different kind of network infrastructure. But again, if you have all these towers and you would have to have an ATSC broadcast chain, which normally, again, includes an encoder, again, harmonics in a medium, ATEM, these kind of things, and then, for example, broadcast chain from us with a transport encoder and the gateway. If you have to have that in each environment of those transmitters, it's not viable. Nobody can afford that. Again, sales hat, I would love to sell it, but no. Nobody can afford that, and it makes, from a technical perspective, no sense. So hence we created these, you know, offshoot products, so to speak, where you replace the whole broadcast chain with a translator or a repeater, which helps you, A, minimizing minimizing the cost, which is, you know, important, but it minimizes the number of boxes you need, which is also important for especially lesser boxes. Your chief engineer is probably a little bit happier because lesser boxes is better, I guess. And then, you know, less power, these kind of things. So the lesser equipment you have at each of the towers, the better for you from a cost perspective, right? So that's what the circle around of the presentation is. How many translators do you have, Vicky? Six. And then how many main sticks? Six and six. See, I would love to sell you 12 broadcast chains, right? But you're gonna say, Ralph, you're cray cray. Which you, by the way, are correct anyway, but that's a different discussion. So what you really need is, you know, basically one broadcast chain that you can basically deal with all the other things around with, you know, translators and repeaters, or, you know, all the kind of technology environments to address the needs for ATSC 3.0. And I think that's basically pretty much what I had. I know this was pretty fast, but I want to give you know, Ali some time to talk about 5G, where I'm going to be really interested in hearing about that one. Any questions out there? Clear as mud, tired from lunch, any of that? But back there.
Not from text, but just from me. I'm wondering how, so a viewer's receiver, how does that validate that signed data that comes through?
So it actually will receive that certificate delivered, and it says, okay, this is actually a valid stream, so I can actually display it. So it will receive the certificate delivered on over the air.
Okay, how is that certificate validated? Is there some something in the firmware that?
Yes, it needs to be in the firmware of the receiver saying what kind of this data structure needs to look like, right? Generically speaking, but then you have a whole process, and if you really want to learn about the process, so Mike Schmidt from Heartland, he can tell you that in very much detail. So there's a whole process with A3SA and EONTI, how that wide vine process happens, so the receiver actually can verify, as you said, this is an accurate receiving stream I can display on the TV. So there's a whole process attached to that. Not much to do for you guys. It's mostly done in the equipment. So from a broadcaster, let me take that back. If you have a lot of call letters, then it's a lot of work because you have to apply for certificates for each call letter, basically.
So is the idea with the signing to avoid receiving unauthorized signals or spoofed signals, things like that?
Correct.
Okay.
Even that, many years ago. I forgot what the company's name was. It basically received ATSC 1.0 and redistributed it and packaged it up. What was the company name called? And they went bankrupt because everybody sued the crap out of them. Oh, I can't say crap. There was a company who received over-the-air TV and then repackaged it and sold it basically to consumers as almost like an MVPD package. But the broadcast industry actually sued them and they went bankrupt because of that. So if there's no technology within that environment, they could do that again, technically, even if it's illegal, right? But I could take the TV stream and basically sell it to you and just resend it. With a signing environment, that's not possible anymore.
I guess I'm just thinking about the way that security certificates work on the online world, and there, generally, a security certificate is issued by a trusted certificate authority, and then when any piece of equipment or system is looking at that certificate, it can verify if that is a genuine certificate from a trusted CA.
Yes.
And that requires on the back end there them to be able to go back and check with that CA, right?
Yep.
And so I guess what I'm kind of struggling with is, if say there's no connectivity back to any other server, how does that validation work?
So it's that validation you described is actually done in your studio. So we put the certificates into the broadcast chain. In our case, it's the guide builder. We put that in there, and that certificate, that the guide builder then goes back to the authority, to that server, and says, "Hey, can I use this certificate?" And if the answer is yes, it sends that certificate down.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, Ralph. I get all of my ATSC 3 news from YouTube antenna influencers.
call me more often.
Lon Sybin and Tyler the Antenna Man, is one of them more reliable? And does Trivini have a YouTube presence?
We have a YouTube presence, but you're looking also at the marketing. So I put my marketing hat on now. So we suck at that. So we're really not good at YouTube or any of those social media channels. So if I had staff, yes, I would love to do that. And by the way, Tyler is really, really, he's great, but he was incorrect with encryption and DRM, right? And keep in mind, the broadcasters, you know, I'm working on a project where we have seven programs on a single stick with StatMux implemented, right? And so there's some StatMuxing going on, so we can flatten the curve and stuff like that. So there's seven programs in there. Some of them are in the clear, and some of them are actually DRM'd, but you know, that's on purpose. And it's not like I pick somebody, WABC. It's not a main program. It's maybe it's just a DigiNet or something like that. So you have the right to do that, but what I think what Tyler didn't understand is that signing is not, and I'm not going to use the words of that vendor. There are a couple of setup box providers, and I have probably three of them in my house. They just don't haven't implemented that yet. So, you know, when they receive the certificate, they don't know what to do with it. And that's exactly the description. So they receive it, but the receiver has no idea, you know, not what to do because it hasn't been implemented. At that point, it doesn't display the audio or video, so you just see encrypted, right? So that's what the problem is. I have one, the one which is actually next-gen TV certified at home in Tampa area, and it works just dandy. I don't have to do anything as a consumer, so. Anybody else? Coffee? Beer? It's Wisconsin. If not, thank you so very much. Appreciate your time. Thank you so very much. And I'll see you guys next year.